speak up, up. Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, November 24th. We are here at CJSF 90.1 FM on the top of Burnaby Mountain. My name is Magnus Teevil. Joining me in the studio today is...
Peter R.H.
And we got a bunch of stuff lined up for the show today. We're going to start off with a look at Indie Fest, which is a local music festival put on by Music BC. It started just this weekend and runs until next weekend. Danny Nesvadarani had a chat with them and give you a little view of what's coming up. We also have an interview about voting reform and transitions to alternative methods besides first past the post. What are you going to be talking about today, Peter?
Well, I was a bit, we had the situation with Taiwan and mainland China wants to take it over. What I found recently was that a lot of the world semiconductors come from Taiwan. And you were aware of that,
yep.
I take it. And what's interesting is that a transistor is sort of a small component, but in many cases a semiconductor... I think a transistor has three parts of a. They have three types of semiconductors, and they will assemble the semiconductors from Taiwan into a transistor in some other country. Actually, so it's a rather niche thing, but there is quite a bit worldwide. Taiwan produces over 60% of the world's semiconductors and more than 90% of the most advanced chips. Now, the United States is not quite that high. In fact, there's a major corporation that does a lot of it that was started in 1987. TMCM.
Yeah, they build almost all the world's chips.
Well, not
advanced
quite.
Chips. Advanced chips.
Oh, 90. That's right. It's 90%.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so I'll be talking about that situation later on in the show.
All right. First, we're going to talk about IndieFest to get our show going.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Starting today, November 20th until November 29th, is IndieFest in Vancouver, an annually held performing arts festival that showcases Vancouver's artistic communities, celebrating emerging technologies and immersive practices in the performing arts. According to the IndieFest website, quote, "Now in its sixth year, IndieFest continues to expand artistic practice and nurture equity-deserving voices, bringing people together across mediums, sectors, and lived experiences. This year's theme, Colliding Art Forms, is a celebration of the unexpected ways artists and audience alike connect. On November 18th, CJSF was invited for a sneak peek of IndieFest at the DigiBC Creative Tech Studio, where we were able to speak with some of the artists and staff involved with the festival. This included Debbie Wong, the founding artistic director of Renaissance, the artistic collective behind IndieFest.
I feel like every year IndieFest evolves a little bit, and that's because like we're really trying to serve the local arts community here. So every year we try something a little bit new and we get feedback from the artists. So last year, one of the things our artists were really interested in was exploring new immersive forms and being able to use this amazing DigiBC Creative Tech Studio that we're in, experimenting with the immersive technologies. So we have a lot of works that are in development, like Will-O-Lisht, and that are testing out the screens, the projectors, the lights, the interactiveness that we can incorporate into performances here. So you'll see that in the performances, but also on November 25th, we have a whole evening of creative collisions where artists that are trying out things in the digital space can come and try our screens and our equipment as well. So that's a little bit different this year.
Afterwards, we were given a snippet of Willilisht, one of the festival's flagship performances, and a production of harmonizing vocals, violins, and loop pedals. The performance included various vocalizations of different nursery rhymes, as well as looped violins and percussion that was being simulated by their hands pressing against the microphone. Once we were finished listening, we were able to speak with Dule Van Den Dam and Haley Sullivan McInerney, the artists behind this immersive production.
I think when there's only two people trying to create a big sound, you're kind of limited with what you can do with all of your hands and feet at any one time. So the loop pedal kind of seemed like an obvious choice. But also, I think there is something in the repetition of it and the reliability of it. And then when you make a mistake, it gets locked in, which is terrifying. But yeah, I guess it was out of necessity initially, and then we've grown to love it and then hate it at different points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been 3 years of learning. When we first started out, we couldn't hit the buttons for if our lives depended on it. It's
yeah.
pretty amazing what practice will do.
It turns out.
Lastly, we asked them what they want audiences this year to know about IndieFest.
I think the design of this show is phenomenal. So yes, there is this music, but also what they're doing behind us and above us and underneath us is crazy. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even seen half of it because I'm trapped in this in this little tent. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's a visual feast, mm-hmm. this show.
Yeah, IndieFest generally programs really exploratory work, both in the kind of things that they're doing and artistically pushing limits and bridging disciplines, but also exploratory in that they really want to foster the exploration of those mediums. So I think the whole festival will be a really interesting range of people sort of coloring outside of the lines.
IndieFest will be going on from November 20th to 29th of this year, and more information on it can be found at reopera.ca. That's reopera.ca. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
And now for some local music from Vancouver band Self Care. This track is called Little Big League. Die like a dog. Vancouver's self-care with Little Big League. And you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Time now for Bird Note, and we'll be back with a talk about voting reform right after this.
This is Bird Note. On a brisk November day, a mysterious whale carries across the lead-gray surface of a northern bay. The notes are drawn out, eerily musical, and can be heard from far away. You're hearing the call of a male black scoter. Black scoters are sea ducks that spend the winter on saltwater bays. The unmistakable drake is feathered jet black, set off by a bright yellow knob atop its bill, a beacon on the dark water. The duck swimming alongside him, dark brown with a vivid brown and white face, is a female. Black scoters are large, strong ducks, a foot and a half long, and buoyant swimmers with a habit of cocking their tails upward. Black scoters return south from nesting on freshwater tundra ponds. Each fall, they can be found on bays all across the northern hemisphere. Through the colder months, these handsome, hardy ducks dive in search of mollusks, sea worms, and other prey. Watch for them along the shoreline where sea ducks gather, scattered among groups of goldeneyes and other scoters. An unmistakable clue to their presence? That mysterious, musical whale. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
A few weeks ago, I talked to Ryan Campbell of Fair Vote Canada, which is an organization which works towards, advocates for voting reform here in, across Canada, and partners with a fellow BC organization to talk about what's going on more specifically here in BC. Ryan Campbell is an SFU student pursuing grad studies, and we sat down to talk about a recent survey by a committee of the legislature looking at people's views in British Columbia, and particularly those of different public organizations and community organizations around the issue of voting reform. And here we go with our talk with Ryan. Thanks for joining me today, Ryan Campbell of Fair Vote Canada. Maybe you can just introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about what Fair Vote does.
So, like you said, my name is Ryan. I'm actually a part-time student at the SFU, and I'm also an engineer. I work full-time in construction as an engineer. I've been involved with Fair Vote Canada since around 2011, 2012. And Fair Vote Canada, we're a national campaign dedicated to adopting proportional representation for all levels of government across Canada.
Right. Pretty much all provinces, territories, and the federal government use the first-past-the-post system. Maybe you can just very briefly explain what that is for folks.
So first-past-the-post, it can refer to a few systems, but normally what we talk about in Canada is you have a single winner in a riding. So there's only one MP or MLA per riding, and you just mark an X next to whoever you like, and whoever gets the most votes wins. It has a few problems. One is that you can have a situation where a party or a group of candidates or whatever gets a majority of the seats without getting the majority of the vote. And you can get, there's been examples of 10, 12% of the vote. I think 13% in Quebec recently, where you get no seats at all. So it leaves large segments of the population unrepresented, not even necessarily the usual suspects, not just small parties, but like urban conservatives, rural progressives, people like that.
What are the shortcomings of the first-past-the-post system?
Well, I may have jumped the gun a little there, but yeah, I think really it doesn't reflect how people voted. And one MP or MLA it's hard for them to really reflect the diversity of their riding. We're an increasingly diverse country, not just, you know, in any one aspect, but especially politically. And the minority groups don't get represented. Now, a lot of MPs and MLAs will say, well, I represent everyone in my riding. But the reality is, when it comes to their vote in the legislature, which is, you know, what makes us a democracy, you can't vote for and against a budget. You can't vote for and against a particular piece of legislation. So it just fails to represent about half of voters.
Right. So, I mean, first past the post, the current system used here in almost everywhere in Canada, is not actually used very much in other democratic countries. The UK uses it, the US uses it, but not many others. So it's been a constant sort of discussion around this topic from groups like Fair Vote about the importance or the need for change. What makes the status quo so sticky?
Well, I think we have a saying, especially this time of year, that turkeys don't want to vote for Thanksgiving. I think that's a problem that, you know, there's winners and losers among politicians with proportional representation, not necessarily among voters. You know, certain politicians, if you come from an area that's very heavily electing representatives from one party, suddenly under proportional representation, your party goes from having for example, Liberals in Toronto having literally all the seats with half the vote, suddenly, you know, you might be getting 55% of the seats, 60% of the seats. That presents a risk to you. So there's that issue. And the reality is that people have an interest in the system that elected them, unfortunately. So parties will look at proportional representation as great when they're in opposition, and then they kind of lose enthusiasm the longer they're in government, unfortunately. That's one problem. I think the other is that we're not taught about this in schools. Like, the civics education doesn't cover the voting system. In fact, the way I was taught, and this was a while ago, actually teaches wrong information about the voting system. You know, you have your model parliament in class and everyone gets to be an MP. Well, that kind of is the logic of proportional representation, where, you know, not everyone gets to be an MP, but everyone, or most people, you know, in New Zealand, say 95% of people get someone they voted for as an MP. And that's not true under first past the post. It's like 50%. Right. So we're actually we're not teaching this to people. So I think there's an awareness issue. I think people kind of feel the effects of it, though, that they don't feel very satisfied with the results necessarily. There isn't a connection made between the voting system and the problems that people see, just because of that education. And fair enough, right? Like, people have only so much time. They're not going to go out of their way to read chapters and chapters about the minutia of voting systems.
So you mentioned, we've sort of touched on proportional representation, but what are the alternatives that Fair Vote advocates for?
So we advocate specifically for proportional representation, and that could take a number of approaches. There's mixed member proportional, there's single transferable vote, there's list systems. There's a lot of technical terms I could go into for each one. I think the simplest one to explain would be a list system. So you might have four members in a riding instead of one. Maybe it's less in a rural area, maybe it's more in an urban area. And you get a quarter of the vote, you get one seat, whether you're a party or an independent. If you get half the vote, you get two seats, three quarters of the vote, three seats, and so on. And that's pretty simple to understand, I think. You also can have what's called an open list, where you actually vote for a candidate rather than a party. So the people that fill those seats are also directly accountable to voters. But there's a lot of ways you can do this. You can, it really, what we're focused on is the principle that people should get what they voted for.
So what are, you've mentioned some of the benefits and advantages. Are there disadvantages?
I don't feel there are, at least if you use reasonable forms of proportional representation that keep the number of MPs elected at one time at a reasonable level, and that keep a direct connection between voters and representatives. You have that direct link that if you don't like someone, you can just not vote for them. I think there's very few drawbacks for people. There's a lot of evidence that there's better healthcare policy, better environmental policy, stronger economic growth, better trade policy. All these things are connected to proportional representation because the incentives are different for the politicians. But it's the politicians. Those are the and a few connected, you know, lobbyists that want to lobby just one party rather than maybe multiple parties in a coalition. They're the ones that have the most to lose. Unfortunately, they're in a position of influence to decide to keep the status quo as well.
Right. In some countries working with a proportional representation system, there can be a sort of tendency for fringe parties to sometimes gain outsized influence in the system just because they're needed to form a coalition. Are there ways to protect against that?
Yeah, one is you have what's called a threshold, and mm-hmm. so you might need a certain number of votes, like say 5% of the vote or 3% of the vote to gain seats. Others just you keep the riding sizes or region sizes smaller. So like my example of a 4-seat riding, you need about a quarter, actually in practice more like a sixth of the vote mm-hmm. to be likely to take a seat. That's still a big chunk of the votes, and that limits the number of parties you get. Yeah. But I think the other thing that you can always do in any of these systems is the big parties can work together if there's a small party making outrageous demands or demands that aren't reflective of the majority. And we have an example of that at BC. The BC NDP wanted to proceed with liquefied natural gas development. Mm-hmm. And whether you think that's good or bad, the Greens didn't want to support that. And what they did is they made an agreement with the BC Liberals to get the legislation passed. So, you know, this concern about outsized influence of a small party, and frankly, the Greens weren't that small. They got, I think, 18% of the vote. That's pretty significant. Mm-hmm. But that's how the system, you know, whether you agree with that policy or not, from a democratic standpoint, that's how it should work, is that the major parties should be able to cooperate when they have common ground. And that's, you know, you see that in countries like Germany right now, for example. I think Denmark is doing that right now, too. Yeah.
So Fairvote recently has done a study of attitudes in BC on voting reform and possible alternatives. What did you hear from that?
Well, it was actually, if this is the there was a committee of the legislature that asked people to submit their views on the voting system, whether they're for proportional representation or against. About a little under 1,000 responded. In some way, but about 850 addressed actually the voting system specifically. Right. And of those 850, about 800, 93% said they want proportional representation. Another 5% said they want the existing single member ridings with a ranked ballot, which mm-hmm. we don't think really solves fundamental problems here. We've used that in the past and scrapped it. And then another 2% wanted to keep first past the post. So pretty overwhelming support there. And it's a fairly significant number of responses. So there is an appetite in certain quarters for reform.
So what kind of things were, because it was individuals and also organizations participating in this process, yeah?
Yeah, so of those 850, I think 46 were organizations, and I think 43 supported proportional representation specifically. And that's, you know, it could be not-for-profits like ourselves. Yeah. It could be charities. It could be unions, for example. Quite a few responded to this.
What were people and groups saying in terms of why they were supporting proportional representation?
Well, I think everyone has their own reasons, potentially. Like, you might see it for a pragmatic reason, like I want better environmental policy or I want better labor policy. But I think the one that most people find the most compelling is just fairness, right? That it shouldn't matter where you live to how effective your vote is, right? If you are in northern BC and you support the NDP, it's very unlikely you will get your vote count towards electing someone. And just like if you're in Vancouver and you support the Conservatives, you're very unlikely to have your vote count towards electing a Conservative, right? Only 1 out of 12, even though Conservatives got a third of the vote in Vancouver. So that kind of fairness, I think, is the most compelling, kind of emotionally engaging argument. But there's pragmatic reasons as well.
So BC has voted 3 times, I think, around this issue in recent decades, with various different results, but never quite enough to actually meet to get the change. Although I think the very first one did in fact come up as a majority, just not the 60% threshold. Why do you think that is? Why do you think there seems to be a lot of support. There seems to be a lot of arguments before it, but what's happening in this issue comes up towards a vote?
I think one issue is referendums aren't a good way to decide minority rights, and this is about minority rights. You know, all these groups, urban conservatives, rural progressives, Greens, these are minority groups. Yeah. And you don't really have the opportunity to kind of bargain and advance these minority groups' interests in a way that's fair in a referendum. I think that education issue I talked about earlier plays into it. We've got polls both nationally and in a couple of places, not specifically BC, but the national one I think is reflective, that about 40% of people think that the current system is proportional. So it's hard to, you know, make an argument for proportional representation when people think it's the status quo, that's how this works. And again, you know, it's not anyone's, you know, fault for this, except that we're not teaching this, right? And people are not, you know, naturally drawn to go to like Wikipedia and read like 10 pages on voting systems. I think those are big issues for referendums. It's actually really a recent thing, this idea of a referendum on electoral reform. All other cases, like, because we've had a lot of electoral reform in Canada. We brought in the secret ballot in the 1870s. That was pretty important. Things like independent redistricting, the charter, with Section 3 of the Charter, universal suffrage. None of these things were done by referendum, with one exception, which is BC had a referendum on whether or not women should be allowed to vote. And that thankfully passed. But all other provinces just had a vote of the legislature. And a country that also had votes on referendums on whether or not women could vote is Switzerland. And that failed up to the 1950s and didn't pass until the 1970s. So you can see, you know, there's this gap of like 50 years between our trajectory and Switzerland on democratic progress. And I think most people would agree that was progress because they insisted on referendums here. I think there's also issues with the lack of accountability, too, that if, you know, politicians can say they support electoral reform, but not actually do anything to support a referendum, whereas a vote of the legislature, yes or no, is much more direct. If you want this policy, you know if your representative voted yes or no in a vote of the legislature. You don't necessarily know what they did in a referendum.
Where do you want to see this process or this issue going